Greetings, everyone. This is Bisal of the Vault of Horror, and I'm joined by
Captain Corella of the Carnivorous Cadavers.
And we are going to be watching The Abominable Dr. Fibes this evening, which I'm very excited about because this is a horror film which is very, very near and dear to my heart, and it has been for a very long time, and it's going to be our pleasure to blab about it for the next, hour and 45 minutes or so.
You're blabbing about it for the next hour and 45 minutes.
Yes, and I'll probably let you get in a few words here
Great.
And there. Well, here he is, the legend, the mastermind, the man himself, the one and only Vincent Price in the role that he was born to play, Dr. Anton Fibes.
I really love his latex apparel. I think every organ player needs one of those.
I don't think anybody ever played the organ with such dramatic flourish in a movie as Dr. Fibes.
Man of style.
Now, Joseph Cotten, of course, who won the Academy Award for Citizen Kane, is sort of slumming it in this movie, I guess you might say, but he adds a touch of class.
That's severe, don't you think, slumming it?
Well, I love Dr. Fibes, don't get me wrong, but I mean, to go from Citizen Kane, I mean, I'm just saying. Terry Thomas, of course, the classic British character actor who you probably know best from It's a Mad, 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 Mad World. One of Fibes' unfortunate victims. Volnavia.
It's a strange name.
Actually, in this movie, he pronounces it Volnavia for some reason. It's only in the second one that he calls her Volnavia, but everybody calls her Volnavia.
It sounds like a sex organ.
What?
Volnavia sounds like a
sex organ. I thought you were talking about the organ
no.
that he's playing. Like, what's a sex organ?
No.
Oh, okay.
I like how his hands are not on the organ at that moment, and he's still playing.
And I just don't think about it too much.
I
do want to say that the score composer was just mentioned in the credits, and I really do think that the score of this film is a huge part of what makes it so memorable, especially Volnavia's theme, which we're about to hear in just a few moments when he introduces her. Dr. Fibes, Clockwork Wizards, the greatest robotic band in history.
The only robotic band in history that I've ever remembered in a movie.
I think there was one in heavy metal. Not as cool as these guys, though.
There was a robotic band in heavy metal?
I think so, in the Tarna scene. Or they might have just been mutants.
I think they were mutants.
Yeah.
It's like, hold on a second, I have to get my quarter.
Now, Dr. Fibes, a lot of people forget, is set in the 1920s. So that is why the band and Fibes himself play so many old-time songs, even though it should be noted that several of these songs were actually written in the 1930s. But we'll let it slide.
Olivia!
Here she is, folks. The one, the only, well, actually not the only, because there was another actress who played Volnavia in Dr. Fibes Rises Again.
I really like her headgear.
I have to say, I do like her better, though.
Yeah, she's way hotter.
She is. Now, a lot of people have speculated about Volnavia and what she exactly is. Is she actually human? Is she some kind of spirit? Is she some type of demigoddess or something? I think it's pretty clear that she is not a human being.
No, she's clearly ethereal because she gets to wear these really awesome headgear. No human could really wear that on their head and get away with it.
Just her wardrobe changes
alone.
What the hell
is that? But do you think she gets good reception with that thing?
Yes, this is in the pre-cable days, folks. Yeah. That's rabbit ears on Volnavia's head.
A really good cell phone tower.
Volnavia has the greatest wardrobe changes in this movie, and I think that alone is what kind of determines that she's not fully human, because no human would have such an awesome wardrobe. Seriously, it's like she was somehow sent to Earth to assist Dr. Phibes. She's omnipresent. She never speaks.
Is this like the Planet of the Apes heads on the wall?
No, this was around the same time. Don't know. What a glorious time for movies, the early 1970s. And music.
I love how they magically appear down below. And here I am with another wardrobe change.
With new clothes on.
A Russian hat.
A giant birdcage, which we do not yet, as of now, know what is inside of it. We're about to find out, and it's not birds.
We ripped it. Now people know it's not birds.
I think anybody listening to this has probably seen this movie a time or two before. And how awesome is it that Phibes has his own profile on the window shades in his car? How awesome is it that Phibes has window shades in his car?
It's pretty awesome.
The first victim of Phibes' murder spree. There's a lot of parallels between this movie and Theater of Blood, which Vincent Price made around the same time. They're both built around a string of very creative and colorful homicide
set
pieces.
Sweet Dreams.
Although I have to say, this movie, I love both of them, and I kind of vacillate back and forth as to which one I prefer, Dr. Phibes or Theater of Blood.
Which one do you prefer?
I have to say, these days, I'm leaning more towards Phibes. They're both excellent, though. It's just Dr. Phibes is just so much fun.
I like this one more.
It's so over the top. I mean, not that Theater of Blood is subtle or restrained, but it's more colorful. It has amazing set design and the camera work.
If only Yara and I can get onto the roof and drop down this birdcage.
Ah, not a birdcage.
This poor, unsuspecting person.
It's a bat cage.
So ridiculous.
Like, Phibes has this all worked out.
Apparently.
He's the world's leading organist killer.
Organist snappy dresser.
Yes.
Fashionista with his fancy shades in his car, like profiles of himself. Who the hell does that? Well, I don't know, sir. The car was getting away with a profile of a man who looked just like this.
He's almost like a comic book villain. He's so over the top. You would almost imagine him facing off with Batman in the TV show or something like that.
All right, so the question I have here is, okay, the cage, obviously, the bottom was open.
Yes.
Did this man sleeping not realize that something was dumped on his bed?
I don't think they were dumped in the room, not on his bed necessarily.
I know a picture before in the images. It was his bedroom. His bed was right below the window.
Oh no.
Oh my god, fruit bats! They're going to eat me! Poor fruit bats. I get such a bad rap.
You'd think he'd be able to get away.
One would suspect.
Every murder gets a different song. And I can identify most of them.
Only you can.
Not only me, but a few others. And the funny thing is the titles of most of the songs tie in humorously to the murder.
My question is, who the hell do you cast for that? Like, so you're gonna wear this outfit and just...
You're gonna wear a papier-mâché human outfit. Okay. Step one is accomplished. See, this is what makes Phibes superior to Theater of Blood for me. It's just these gorgeous sets, and just a really dark sense of humor. There's something about it that is so unique. This movie brings me great joy in a way that few things in life do, movie or otherwise.
What the hell was that bat doing?
I think it was trying to eat the eggs and toast.
Help me, I've got ketchup all over my face.
Vibes. Fulfilling the very, very methodical tradition that he's setting up for these murders of melting the wax bust of the man he's just killed and hanging the symbol of the katak over his head.
Wow, that was shredded. This only had, like, melted wax and some ketchup.
Inspector Trout, our great protagonist and Fives' most unworthy foil. Now, this is a great, great character actor who plays this part, and an extremely ugly human being.
He almost, man has a great, great nose.
Okay. He almost is like, he's like a British Ed O'Neill. He does have an enormous proboscis. He's really good, though. Everybody, that's the thing. Everybody in this movie is really good. I think it's these British actors and their training. They're just a cut above. I think it's because they all got their training on the stage, maybe. I don't know. I've seen this movie so many times, and just watching this guy and all of his facial expressions and every move he makes and the delivery of his lines, it's just everything is just so perfect.
I just think it's his nose. I just really can't get over it.
His nose is a big part of it, clearly.
Right. Oh, Dr. Fives. Gluing his face on.
This is the first time we learn that Fives' face is an artificial one. He has, of course, been horribly disfigured in a car accident, as we later discover.
I think that since he has to wear a wig, he'd wear one that was a little bit, you know, less like that.
It is one of the worst wigs ever created. But that's part of what makes him so amazing. This is the first time we actually see Vincent Price's face in the film. And it's amazing, really, because this role, in a lot of ways, was, I said it before, the role he was born to play. And I really wasn't kidding around. I really think this might be his greatest part. And it's ironic that he
doesn't talk hardly at all.
I mean, he does with his little voice box thingy, but I mean, his mouth never moves. It's kind of unusual. Now, the song we're hearing now is the Darktown Strutters Ball, which is pre-political correctness. It's a great hot jazz standard of the 20s, and it's the theme song of the next murder. Of course, this murder is based on the Plague of Frogs. As we later learn, each of the murders in Fives is based on a different plague from the Book of Exodus.
We never get invited to parties like this.
Well, speak for yourself.
Speak for myself. Well, we never get invited. Well, maybe you do. I never do.
Fives doing a camera take. Pretty classic. Actually addressing the camera. Because, of course, we all know he is about to kill this man by crushing his head. And the song we're about to hear now, the Darktown Strutters Ball is the song. This is kind of funny for people who are fans of cartoons of the 60s and 70s. The guy who's doing the who's singing the song, his name is Paul Frees, who was one of the most noted voice actors of that time, and he did tons of voices in things like Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, Rocky and Bullwinkle, Frosty the Snowman. He was known as a prolific voice actor. And for some reason, he's the guy who's recording this version of Darktown Strutter's Ball.
Yeah, I thought his voice sounded familiar.
Yeah, it's a very recognizable voice.
The frog gets it while the pig looks on.
What a way to go. Good Lord. Great shot. You actually see at one point from his point of view, and you see his this everything turn red as his mask presumably fills with blood. And Paul Frees takes us out. Number two.
Tough luck, dude.
Plague of frogs. So we've had the plague of bats and the plague of frogs. Or was it? It was the plague of blood. Was the first one maybe?
Well, I don't know. I've never heard of a plague of bats before. Have you?
Yeah, maybe it was blood. Not too up on my Torah. Really liking the Beefsteak Charlie hairdo. I miss Beefsteak Charlie.
It is nice to do. Well, I've seen your hair look a lot like that.
I have never combed my hair that way. I've combed my son's hair that way, but it never lasts long. I once described Dr. Fives as being a movie that is enjoyable for every single moment from the beginning to the end, which I know is a strange thing to say, but when you think about it, there's really few movies you could say that about.
Oh my God, is this one of my favorite parts? This is the lipstick scene.
Which one?
The lipstick scene.
No, that's Theater of Blood.
Oh, isn't it?
The lipstick scene, when he cuts off the guy's head.
Oh, my God.
That's Theater of Blood.
Ridiculous.
Oh, the great Terry Thomas. Terry Thomas, the prototypical, stuffy British actor from the American perspective. He was always used in roles like that. He's got the classic gap tooth. And he puts on the classic kind of stuffy, stereotypically British upper-class accent. Got his little stag film that he's about to watch. 1920s porn. There we go.
Wow, enticing.
Hey, listen, I guess they took what they could get back then.
Oh, yes, she's got a big snake.
A little brandy, a little porn. Those were the days. Now, this particular guy, part of his character, the Terry Thomas's character, is that he's sort of kind of licentious and kind of he's kind of a dirty old man. You can see he has erotic paintings all over his office. And Fibes, at one point, it's hilarious when he comes in to kill him. He just sort of stares in disgust at the paintings that he has on the wall. It's pretty funny. Now, I was saying before that he's best known probably to a lot of us for his part in It's a Mad, 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 Mad World. Anybody who's seen that, which was about 5 years before this, or maybe a little more, would know that he was the stuffy Englishman, of course, that is picked up by the car carrying Milton Berle and Ethel Merman. And he's got some amazing scenes with Milton Berle and Ethel Merman in that movie.
Come to me and I'll swallow your snake.
Paul Navy, of course, preying on the weakness of Terry Thomas's character.
I'll do the shimmy shake shake for you with my blue eyeshadow.
He can't believe what good fortune he's fallen into here. If only he knew what was about to happen. This is probably one of the more humane of the murders in this film.
Here I come to cut off your wiener. What does he do? I don't even remember.
He just drains all the blood out of him very carefully into glass jars, which was done in the movie, gosh, I want to say, of course people watching this will know, was it Seven? Or was it maybe... I think it might have been The Exorcist 3. God, someone's going to be listening to this and will know the answer. I think it was Exorcist 3. There was a horror film where someone was very carefully drained of all their blood.
It wasn't a Saw movie.
It was glass jars, and it wasn't a drop spilled anywhere, just like this. Now, it's funny you mentioned Saw, because a lot of people, very rightfully so, talk about how this concept of Saw actually came in some ways from this movie, and also the movie Seven, also, because you've got the whole idea of themed murders built around a different biblical plague, and in Seven, you have themed murders with each one built around a different deadly sin. In the movie Saw, well, as we'll see at the end of this movie, we have the predicament that the doctor finds himself in, Joseph Cotton's character, where he has to remove a key from the belly of his own son in order to unlock him from the table under above which there is acid waiting to be dropped on him. And it's this very Byzantine trap, which clearly was an inspiration for the type of things that we would later see in the Saw movies. So Dr. Fibes, very, very influential in the horror genre.
I'd say.
The great Joseph Cotton in his introductory scene. You can see by the way he's introduced here that there's reverence shown to the fact that such a great actor is in this film. Joseph Cotton, of course, was the supporting part. He played the supporting role in Citizen Kane opposite Orson Welles. He was Kane's best friend and right-hand man. Until they have their famous falling out, of course, on the newspaper when Joseph Cotton's character writes a negative review for the opera in which Kane's new wife appears. Joseph Cotton won the Oscar for Best Supporting Actor for that, and he never really quite got back to that level in his career. The song we're hearing now is Close Your Eyes, of course.
Maybe, yeah. Such sweet, sorrowful music.
Close your eyes. Beautiful song. Terry Thomas apparently has strawberry Kool-Aid flowing through his veins.
Yeah.
Movie blood is always a funny thing. It very rarely looks real, but I think a lot of the times that's kind of what they're going for. Watch this. What? He smells the brandy, disgusted, puts it down. He's about to leave the frame. He comes back into the frame and stares at that picture before he leaves. Watch this. Mm-hmm. That, ladies and gentlemen, that is perfect.
Oh, Lester Boyce. Lester Fives.
I love the decor in Joseph Cotton's apartment. I'm not sure if it's quite accurate to the 20s, but it's amazing.
Very retro.
Yeah. Well, it kind of looks more like 60s, which, wouldn't you know it, this movie was made in 1971. Tiki mask on the wall there. Makes me happy.
You don't miss anything, do you?
I've seen this movie about 100 times. Well, maybe 10 times. This would be murder number 4, yes?
Mm,
yeah, because there's one that takes place before the movie starts, the bees. We don't get to see that one.
No, that makes me sad. Death by Bees is pretty awesome.
Yeah, would have been.
It's mine and I can't find it.
Fives' great mistake.
Olivia!
He drops his little medallion at the scene of the crime, at the Terry Thomas murder. And that is the one clue that enables them to eventually find him and foil his great master plan. Terry Thomas died, I believe, of Alzheimer's disease. And a completely unrelated bit of trivia, I think he was actually cared for by Phil Collins.
What?
Phil Collins kind of took him under his wing and cared for him in his old age and poor health, helped raise money to support him. Okay, the jeweler. Another great character actor in this film, and I wish I had the IMDb information in front of me, but this guy is just incredible in just one brief scene in this movie. And he's perfect. This is the scene in which we learn the meaning of the medallions that Fives has been placing on each of his victims. I just love listening to the way that he delivers his lines here in this scene. This kind of long, protracted, two-head close-up.
Yes.
It's a lot of work when you really think about it because, it's such a long shot with two people talking. If anybody messes up a single word, you've got to do the whole thing over again.
On that, can you imagine if they had lunch? That was like onions.
That too.
Yeah. We're like, here, have a breath mint.
Another great clue is we learn that the writing on the medallion is Hebrew, which leads Trout to the discovery of the plagues of the pharaohs being part of the symbolism of the murders. Now, the guy who plays the rabbi here was actually also in Dr. Fives Rises Again. He was the assistant to Beiderbecke, who is Fives' great nemesis in that film. And he's the first guy, I think, that Fives kills in the movie. Of course, here he's playing a totally different role. This is the part where Pike discovers exactly what's going on here with all of the biblical plagues from the Book of Exodus.
The curse of irregularly long eyebrows.
Yes, that's the. I think that's the one that Fibes doesn't get to at the end.
Yeah.
The actor here, I didn't have his name before, but the actor who plays the rabbi is a guy by the name of Hugh Griffith. Who was also...
The priest?
No, but he was in Dr. Fives Rises Again. He's the guy that Fives kills on the cruise ship and dumps him overboard in the bottle.
Oh, right, yes. I do remember.
He is the assistant to Beiderbecke.
Oh, I want my house to look like that.
Fives just coming home from a nice murder. Just relax and unwind.
He's like, Vonavia, pour me a glass of Merlot.
I don't think Vincent Price would drink Merlot.
No,
I think he'd take something a little fancier than that. Maybe a Cabernet Sauvignon.
Really? Says the man who drinks Merlot.
I'm not Vincent Price, contrary to popular belief.
You kind of look like him a little bit. Not in this movie, of course. The wig is just downright awful.
Thank you. Fives' great soliloquy to his late wife, Victoria. This is classic Vincent Price.
You think they would have taken a better picture of her? She looks pissed. She's like, damn it, will you stop trying to bring me to life? Do something with your wig, for God's sakes. Took somebody in the office about a year to collect all that.
Joseph Cotten had that kind of refined Southern accent. You could tell that he reins it in a little, but he's definitely a true Southern gentleman. Reminds me a little bit of DeForest Kelly, the guy who played Dr. McCoy on Star Trek.
He does, actually.
Yeah.
What is up with that sculpture in the background?
Of course, Dr. Viserys is putting the pieces of the puzzle together and figuring out what we all kind of know already.
Didn't say her name was Victoria Regina Fibes?
Victoria Regina.
Jesus.
Which means queen. Like Queen Victoria, Victoria Regina. See, we always thought it was pronounced Regina, but we were being kind. It's like saying Uranus. Nine rings for mortal men doomed to die. Thank you. the origin story of Dr. Fibes being told. Yes, but we all know he's not dead. Fibes did not die. You can't kill Dr. Fibes.
No, he has to have a smoking hot, ghostly apparition chick named Volnavia.
Peter Jeffrey, the name of this great British actor who plays Inspector Trout. I really love this guy.
This guy?
Yeah, I've never seen him in anything else except the Dr. Fibes movies, but he's amazing. I'm sure he's done a lot of British stuff, and British filmgoers probably know of him.
Oh, God, he'd be hard to miss, I mean, with the schnoz that he has.
I think his nose enters the room about 15 minutes before he does.
It's the only thing I see on his face. I'd be like, the man has eyes, really? All I see is a nose. You're looking for me.
Oh, this is the good one. This is the Hale murder, I do believe. That's what's coming up now. The Plague of Hale. What kind of dog is that?
A Saluki.
Okay.
Or a greyhound.
She has such presence. She really does. Virginia North, the actress who plays Volnavia in only the first Fibes movie, not the second one. A lovely lady by the side of the road in need of help. Chivalry is not dead, however.
Well, when you look like her, certainly isn't.
Well, the doctor is about to be, that's what I'm saying.
Oh.
This poor sot.
You need some help? Yes, I do.
I don't think Fibes kills him. I think he just knocks him out.
Well, he learned his trick from Spock.
Well, the thing about Fibes, and this is one of the reasons I'm not as crazy about the sequel as I am about the first one, is he has a code. He's sort of like Dexter. He doesn't just indiscriminately kill people. He only kills the people that he's after or that he feels deserve it. And, you know, I don't think he killed the chauffeur because I think the police determined later that he's still alive. But by the time you get to the sequel, Fibes is just kind of wholesale murdering everyone in his way, regardless of whether they've really done anything wrong. If I could be with you 1 hour tonight.
This is the creepiest motherfucking doll ever.
That is the song we are listening to. Great scowl. I think one of the reasons why I like this movie so much, too, is that it's the same reason why I love Theater of Blood, is that everybody in it, there isn't a weak link. Even the smallest part, everybody is memorable. No matter what the role is or the part, every character, every actor is memorable in this movie, right down to the jeweler, who's one of my favorites. And again, I didn't mention his name, but now that I have my proper notes in front of me, Aubrey Woods was the name of the most excellent English actor who played
Smith. I was waiting for him to drink his drink. I wanted to see how far he could put his nose in it.
See, now this is classic anachronism, like I was talking about before. We're hearing One From My Baby, which is a song from the 1930s, written by Johnny Mercer for Fred Astaire, but now we're hearing it in the 1920s. Not only are we hearing it in the 20s, but we're hearing it in the style of Frank Sinatra, who did not record it until the 50s. So, there you go.
Why is she cleaning up? And second of all, why is one of the puppets smoking?
This is just Valnavia's kind of quiet moment alone in the lair, just hanging out with the Clockwork band. Looking just beautiful.
It's like, I just did my dirty work and I'm mopping up the floor that no one sort of dies on.
Being accessory to murder is very hard work. See, here's where we learn that the chauffeur is actually still alive. Which is important, because Fives does not kill anyone except the doctors.
Bloody hell.
What a way to go.
You think that he'd have time to get out?
Yeah, it's a good point. Maybe the door was locked. Early refrigeration unit. Another one bites the dust.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure I'm sure he could have gotten away.
Salius's son really creeps me out. I'm convinced that the voice is dubbed.
He sounds like a girl.
Yeah. Sean Burry is the name of the actor. Plays Salius' son.
Okay, Dad.
Yeah, his son is apparently like 17 going on 8. No way that's his voice.
I bet he knows a thing or two about organs.
Nice. See, that was uncalled for. But we've just learned an important plot point that Vesalius might be able to get some information from the music instructor on Fives' history, because Fives was once a renowned organist, amongst many other things, religious scholar, man about town, future lunatic. Did they have headphones in the 1920s? I don't know, but I really would like to think that they did.
What is it with these people in this movie? They either have horrible hair or really giant noses.
What it is that they are amazingly glorious English character actors. That's what it is. Such as Mr. John Laurie, who plays Darrow in that very brief scene. Oh, I could watch this all day. I could watch just 2 hours of this. It would be like the Yule log for me. More proof that Fives is actually still alive. If these gentlemen would simply come to their senses. It's almost like Dracula in the way, and I know because we just watched Bram Stoker's Dracula again not too long ago, how you have all these weak men, impotent men, as Dracula calls them. I love this guy. What a great line. They'll have the worm soon enough from the gravedigger. But as Dracula calls all the men, he calls them your impotent men with their foolish weapons. And it reminds me a lot of this, because you've got these guys who are just trying their best to keep up with Fives, and he's always one step ahead of them. He's always got the upper hand, and they're trying somehow to piece together his mastermind.
They're kind of bumbling idiots.
Well, especially Pike, yes. never quite thought of Fives that way, but I guess he is almost like a Dracula figure.
Oh, well, maybe beautiful.
A beautiful, completely gratuitous scene. I think this is the first time we hear the Volnavius theme. Although, no, it might be actually the second time.
No, we heard it in the beginning.
Yeah, that's true, we did. Beautiful piece of music.
I'm in peach dress and I'm going to...
See, it's scenes like this...
Bring my flowers to you.
that make this movie so amazing, because this scene really... Plot-wise, it doesn't take us anywhere. It doesn't. It could have probably very easily been cut out. But what this movie would be lacking if it didn't have scenes like this and moments like this. Just perfect. Just perfect. Oh. This is why we love Dr. Fives.
I wonder if she's still standing there. Arms outstretched while Dr. Fives slowly sinks into the floor.
I like to think that she is. Robert Fuest, the director of The Abominable Dr. Fives, obviously had a tremendous sense of flair and style. Apparently, Dr. Fives and his wife perished in the year 1921, although Fives, of course, did not die.
Fools, the worms be crawling soon.
They'll have the worms
soon
enough.
They'll have the worms soon enough.
One of the great lines of the movie, and it's the only thing the guy says. Looks like one of the head coffins from Fido. Pike is not completely inept, but he's just not quite swift enough to catch Fives, that's all.
No.
He's not an Inspector Clouseau, but
his nose slows him down.
Yeah, I think that's what it is. April 20th, 1921. Victoria Regina Fives. And of course, the coffin is empty.
Did we ever find out or wonder what the hell it was that she went on the operating table for?
You know, actually, we never do. It's never explained to us exactly what procedure she was having done. I don't think it is. If it was childbirth or something, we don't know.
God, I hope he wasn't in Switzerland, like, skiing and doing whatever the hell it was he was in Switzerland.
I think he was probably off playing the organ somewhere. But the actress, now this is interesting, the actress...
He was off playing the organ somewhere.
Well, he was a renowned organist, Dr. Anton Fives, as we all know. I was going to say, though, the actress who plays, quote-unquote, plays Victoria, this is interesting, is actually Carolyn Monroe, who was a prominent English genre actress of the 60s and 70s, and in some stroke of brilliance, they decided to cast her as Fives' wife, even though she only appears as a photograph. And I think very briefly at the end of the film as well.
Yes, dead.
Dead.
The hell, did the car drive itself?
Maybe it did.
Oh, you silly, silly man, you.
Yes, plague of rats coming right up, ladies and gentlemen.
This is the strangest death of them all. Why rats on an airplane?
Well, they've had snakes on a plane, right? So
that's right.
Fibes, once again, an innovator.
What do you think Fibes would say? Do you think he'd pull it off like Samuel Jackson?
I think he would say, would somebody get these Monday to Friday rats off my... I forget how it goes. These monkey-loving rats,
monkey-loving rats
off this Monday to Friday plane.
That's what he would say.
Yes, he would.
The guy didn't see all the rats when he got on his airplane?
No, of course not. Now here, Crow, Derek Godfrey playing Crow, Pike's sidekick, is trying to intercept Dr. Kitai at the airfield. They almost have caught up to Fibes' schemes, but they're not quite there. This is beautiful. What a great shot. I've used that image before on the vault of just Fibes smelling the daisies.
I will smell these while you push them up as rats devour you on an airplane.
So people always accuse Vincent Price of being just a total ham, but I don't think he ever really grew into that stereotype until this stage of his career. I think he really was genuinely trying to be... I don't think he became sort of a parody of himself in the later years, and I mean that in a positive way, because I love the fact that he was able to embrace his hamminess and play it up. I don't think he was doing that so much consciously in the 50s and 60s.
He's the only person I know who can do that.
But he did it in the 70s a lot.
His own special flair.
Yeah, he enjoyed playing up the fact that he was a complete ham. I mean, he is loving this part. There is nothing subtle about Dr.
Fives. This part is a lot like Monty Python and the Holy Grail for me. It's like, boom, 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 plane. Boom, 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 plane. Okay, the plane's finally in the air. Okay. Bring on the rats! Look at those guys like, ta ta ta. Oh, Valnavia, Dr. Fives.
Too late.
The rats.
Nothing you can do about it. No cell phones. Out of luck.
These poor rats. You know, this the worst part about it all is that rats are actually kind of sweet.
Yeah, really?
Says the zombie broad.
Yeah, they seem lovely. I love them. They're just such lovable animals.
They're actually incredibly smart. They train them to eat this guy and fly the airplane. But you didn't know that.
See, that's what it is. It's not the rats that kill him in the end. It kind of is.
I like how the rat has red eyes. Like, give this rat red eyes and let him eat his balls.
It's so perfect, too, that Vincent Price did actually play a Batman villain on the TV series, because he really is cut out to be a comic book villain.
Oh, this guy has the same deadly facial affliction that the bats gave.
Now watch Fibes when the plane crashes. Watch this.
He's like, oh,
he spins the telescope in glee and applauds. Vincent Price, of course, as we all know, played Egghead on the Batman TV show.
Bum, bum, bum.
Now, it's funny because I think I've actually referred to Trout as Pike a couple of times as I've been talking, just because it's a running gag in the film that people keep giving Trout the wrong name. And pike, of course, is a different type of a fish from a trout, so that would be the explanation for that mix-up.
I want some gloves to drive with.
I think that driving gloves really need to make a comeback.
I think you should make the comeback.
Yeah. Maybe goggles, too. What do you think?
I can see you wearing goggles.
I have some in my drawer. They're for swimming, but I could still wear them to drive.
I want to see that.
They're blue.
And some fins. Maybe a snorkel mask.
Look at this.
Oh, Volnavia. He's like, let me take you by the hand. Celebrate.
Now, the screenwriters had to be very careful not to make the relationship between Phibes and Volnavia ever get too intimate, because it would undermine that essential part of Phibes' character, which is his devotion to his late wife, Victoria. So you'll notice it never quite crosses that line. And in fact, there was a scene shot for the film in which they kiss.
This cracks me up.
Well, yes. Phibes drinking through a hole in his neck, which we never see. And which my son made very clear to point out to me that he probably did not really pour the drink into his neck, but they probably just had him pour it behind his back, which I thought was very sharp of him. And actually more than I understood, because I thought he was pouring it into a hole in his neck. So there you go.
Really?
Yeah.
What's wrong with you?
I just, you know, I'm very gullible. Phibes, a very elegant and Epicurean homicidal maniac.
I'm not sure I understood the whole, I'm going to take you for a very fast 5-second waltz, then sit you back down.
Well.
What was that all about?
I don't know, but what I was saying before about the kissing scene, a lot of people may realize that, or may remember a famous shot of Phibes in his monstrous makeup kissing Volnavia, and that scene was actually cut out because they didn't want them to appear to be too romantically involved. Yeah. Classic moment coming up here. Boom!
Oh, I hate when I get
pierced. And it's the plague of beasts. Now, the moment that we're about to see here is one of the most perfect moments in this film, because they have to actually remove the doctor from the wall by unscrewing him. You see this poor chap just trying to read his newspaper. Reminds me of the English club in New York City, where I actually had a holiday party for a previous job that I once had. It was very much like that. There were all these old British and American gentlemen reading newspapers and playing chess. We had to be very quiet as we set up for the party so that we didn't disturb them.
Scene cracks me up. He's like, I'm busy melting the face off this man. Meanwhile, Vernegia's in the background. She's like, oh, I'm going to dance around.
They're quite the duo.
Pink outfit.
They really are quite the duo.
That's going to be beautiful to be the play.
One of my favorite line, actually, of the entire movie is about to come up here. And it comes from, actually, from Trout's boss. Quite a muff on Victoria.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I would say it is.
It's really huge. Don't you find?
I do find that she has a very large mouth.
Yes. Yeah, she does. Carla Monroe, very, very beautiful actress.
So the thing with animals.
I guess so. I always felt that the origin of Mr. Freeze sort of drew a lot from this, and I wonder if that was intentional or not. The Batman villain, Mr. Freeze, who has his wife preserved and who enters into a life of crime based upon the fact that his wife was killed and his need to avenge her death and also to bring her back to life. Oh, here. My favorite line coming up. I love it. A brass unicorn head has been catapulted across a London street and impaled an eminent surgeon. Words fail me, gentlemen. Now, this scene here is a nod to Price's real-life affinity for cooking. Price was actually a very well-respected chef. And he...
He's like, I wonder what's happening.
And he had a cooking program on television, which a lot of Generation Xers, I think that might have been their first exposure to Vincent Price. I know it was mine, was his cooking show.
Well, Vilnavia has changed already with some crazy ass whatever the hell that is.
I remember seeing Price in horror films as a kid and thinking, that's the guy from the cooking show.
He's cooking a bunch of Brussels sprouts.
Yes.
Someone is really going to...
He's making them into some type of syrup for the locusts.
He's going to have some serious gas tonight.
Yeah, well, that's going to be the least of her troubles, actually.
Locust serum.
It's to attract them, so they will eat the flesh off her bones. Yes. Trout's hubris, of course, will be his undoing. He thinks he's got Fibes cornered, but little does he know that Fibes is already inside the hospital as he tracks down the next member of the surgical team, in this case, the nurse. Seemed to be eight. Nurse Allen, played by Susan Travers. Of course, Fibes is in the elevator car with them.
And no one notices nope. That there's a man not staring at them.
Well, you know, he was working on something in the corner there.
Yes, standing in the corner.
This is really a beautiful hospital.
Yeah.
It sort of looks like the Enterprise.
A little bit.
Without the swishing doors. Well, you won't have to sleep because you'll be dead in about 10 minutes. Of course, Visalius seals her doom here by instructing her to take a sleeping pill, because that enables her to sleep through all of that Brussels sprout syrup being poured on her through the hole in the ceiling.
All right, I think when I watched this the last time, I was like, how the hell does this woman not feel this being poured on her face?
That's because of the medication that she has taken to help her sleep, which, from what I understand, will enable people to sleep through quite a bit. Or so I have heard.
Well, damn, I should probably give it to my victim, huh? Less screaming involved.
Oh, that's poor sportsmanship. Mm, it's dirty pool.
Yeah, I never said I played it clean.
I love the fact that Fibes actually has to lay out a map of the nurse's body in order to know exactly where to drill the hole. Just picturing him taking the time out to draw this map and create it just for this purpose.
Really? You couldn't have just drilled a friggin' hole?
Again, that just would not be Dr. Fibes.
Because he's not human. Maniacal. Damn, I need one of those too.
I think so. Of course, he needed to lay down that diagram to know exactly where to drill.
Yeah, because he had no idea where the head would be.
No clue.
Peekaboo, I see you. Now I'm going to pour the brassica syrup on your head.
The song is Charmaine, which was a beautiful love song of the 1920s, which a lot of people may recognize as the song that's played in the mental ward in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Very nice. Yes. Well, it looks like he's missed her head.
Somewhere in her general vicinity. Frank Sinatra did a great version of this song on his album All Alone.
I have to say that that's a lovely fact, but have to say that I don't care how much of a sleeping pill I took, if I was coated in a...
in Brussels like sprout that, syrup?
If I was coated like that, I'd have to say I would probably have woken up.
Yeah? You think I would?
Yes.
Yeah?
Yes.
We should test that theory out.
You want me to pour some Brussels sprout serum on your head?
Yeah. I've been waiting. The locusts. The most famous biblical plague of all, I would say.
They look hungry. Although I didn't think locusts ate human flesh.
Well, it's the Brussels sprout syrup that they're interested in. It just happens to be on her flesh, so they don't really discriminate. Now, where Fibes got the locusts from, we don't know. Mail order catalog? I don't know.
This is very elaborate. Why didn't he just open the bottom and just put it over the hole?
Why didn't he just shoot her? That's the real question.
yeah. this is ridiculous how they're going down, like, you know.
Great shot.
Yes, my Lucas, little buddies. Well, thank God he wasn't in a friggin' rush to get the bugs out.
Right under their noses, and that is a considerable nose to be under. Indeed he is, Vesalius. You do not yet realize.
Even for the bathroom.
Ah, Trout makes the connection. It's not Vesalius that Fives is after, but his son, his androgynous son.
The one who's like, Daddy, do you want to read the paper with me?
But as usual, they will be too late.
He's like, get down there, you goddamn grasshopper thing. It'd be awesome if it came up and got him in the eye right there.
No, it wouldn't. Oh.
That's the ugliest boy child ever.
Too late.
The hair is quite interesting.
Not accurate to the time. I find in a lot of period films that were made in the 1970s that people really didn't pay attention to hair. And they just walk around with 1970s hairstyles, no matter what time period it's supposed to be. Happy Days being the worst, the most guilty party in that regard.
I didn't know you really paid that much attention to it.
If it's Potsy's hair, I'm paying attention to it. Guy's hair was out of control. It was not the 50s hairstyle. Yeah, go check on Nurse Helen. See how she's doing. Nurse Helen is no more.
She's all covered with insects.
Farewell, Nurse Allen.
So sorry, so sad.
Just one more to go. They're also very careful not to have Fibes talk too much in the first one, which I think is another reason why I like it better. Because when he does speak, it's always these very grand soliloquies, speeches.
That's right, he does talk a lot in the second one.
In the second one, he's talking constantly through the whole thing. It's too much. It's just... he might as well not even have the voice box anymore.
Okay, wow. That's a bit much.
I never noticed that. In all the times I've watched this movie, I never noticed that. Oh, that's great. It's the Phantom of the Opera.
Here's my organ.
I think that might be the gold telephone from Godfather Part 2. Could be wrong. In grand tradition, the final confrontation at Fibes' secret lair is about to commence.
I don't understand why he'd give it away.
I think it's because he has no illusions of getting away. Once he finishes what he's set out to do, he really doesn't care what happens to him. Sure you will.
Oh, maybe
this is without a doubt her greatest outfit.
I can't decide what she looks like.
This is what it was all building up to.
She either looks like a giant crab. The sun.
She's the sun. I
don't really know what's going on. I don't know what's happening.
I think she's the sun.
That's some fancy-ass necklace.
Looks like one of yours.
Sure it does, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Although I don't have the headgear that she has.
No.
No.
Get on that.
And my breasts are bigger. Can we get on that, too?
Yes.
Oh.
Here we go.
He turned on his glorious cloak.
Salius has arrived at Maldine Square. And Fibes' headquarters.
Give me my son.
I love how he actually has a Victrola to play his voice as he walks around. Now, this is the murder that the last murder set piece of the film, which is the most reminiscent of what you might see in a Saw film. And I don't think that's any coincidence at all.
No, I don't think so either.
Which is ironic, because Dr. Fives is a comedy. And Saw is anything but...
Well, maybe I'll show him to the depths.
And here we see Vesalius' son underneath the acid that Fives is about to unleash upon him if his father cannot surgically remove the key from his abdomen to unlock him from the operating table. Trout awakes, grabs his brandy, and he's back on the case.
That's how my days usually are. Not really call for Sergeant, though. I just call for you. We saw! Brains!
There we go. I love the set of Fives' lair. Beautiful. It completely destroys suspension of disbelief, but the fact that he'd be able to create something like that. But when you're watching a movie like this, it really is not about suspension of disbelief, I have to say. I don't think realism was what they were going for.
Yeah, I don't think so. Doesn't this kill her?
Yes. This is how poor Volnavia meets her end, at least temporarily, because she does return, proving that she is very likely a supernatural entity.
Yes.
She does return in the second film, none the worse for wear. And that might actually be why they had her be played by a different actress. I never considered that. Although, I mean, I'm sure it's also because, for whatever reason, they could not get the original actress.
Well, maybe she wasn't quite as young and beautiful.
Virginia North. No, it was the next year. They made the sequel the following year. Part of the reasoning, maybe plot-wise, might have been that she had assumed a new physical incarnation. If we can say that, I don't know.
There's that.
Maybe. Here comes the acid. Looking very much also like the blood in the Terry Thomas scene.
Fruit punch jello.
That looks delicious, actually.
I know, right? You put your mouth at the end of the tube when it comes down.
Yeah, yummy acid. I really want that robe.
Really?
Yeah.
You want like a big S on the back of it, too?
I want to wear it. I'll wear it to work.
I would really think that would be awesome if you wore that to work.
I'll just go to work.
You should wear it when you do commentaries.
And I'll be like, Nine killed her. And they'll be like, you're fired. We are about to gaze upon the true face of Dr. Fives. Which... I think it's a great makeup job here, or a mask, or whatever the heck it is, and I don't know why they don't show it more often. You only very briefly see it here. It also appeared on a cover of Famous Monsters of Filmland, the Dr. Fives makeup. Really wish they had Vincent Price in that makeup more often in this movie. Although I wonder if it even is him under the makeup.
Probably not.
I don't know. You can't tell. I mean, he's unrecognizable. Something tells me it might not be him.
No?
I don't know.
No.
Octavia goes about destroying the lair because the mission is about to be accomplished. It's interesting because at the start of the second film, Fives is very surprised and angry.
To find the place destroyed. I know, I don't get it.
But he had her do it. Little continuity error. Here we go. Face reveal. So what do you think? You think it's Vincent Price?
Oh, no. The schnoz is awful short.
Fives, of course, looking that way as a result of the car accident that he was in that allegedly had led to his death. I think that song might be I Don't Want to Set the World on Fire that they're playing, although I'm not sure that the Clockwork musicians are playing. It now segues into the great Dr. Fives organ theme as he descends for the last time.
Dum 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 dum.
Here comes the acid.
Not the acid.
Not the Clockwork Wizards.
Why, oh why? They're like, who's this broad? What's she doing?
30 seconds. He's got the key. And now Volnavia meets her end temporarily. The only sound she makes in the film, much like a bunny rabbit, is in death.
Aww. She wasn't very cute and cuddly. She was just really super hot.
I don't think you'll need an ambulance for Volnavia.
No.
Maybe a shovel.
No one knows, but here's the organ.
As always, one step behind the mastermind. And that's all we get to see of the Fives mask or makeup or whatever it is.
It makes me sad that you only see it for a few seconds.
Yeah, you see a little more of it in the second one, but I don't know why they... Maybe it was because they realized they had such a recognizable actor and they didn't want to cover his face for too much of the movie. That's usually what happens in movies like this when you've got a famous actor playing a part like that. Kind of why Sylvester Stallone did not wear the Judge Dredd helmet when he played Judge Dredd. Disappointed a lot of fans. Things like that.
But he's still Sylvester Stallone.
Yes.
to play whoever the hell he wants, right? Although now he looks more like his mother.
Jackie?
Yeah.
There we have the body of Victoria Fibes, Carolyn Monroe. In the flesh.
With a golden telephone in the casket with her.
Mm-hmm.
Guess he wants to phone home.
The final step of Dr. Fibes' master plan, which is his own demise. Although we learn in the sequel that he can very easily be brought back from the dead, even if he has embalming fluid in his veins. It's not enough to keep Dr. Fibes down. But for all intents and purposes in this film, Dr. Fibes commits harikari to enter into the great beyond his beloved Victoria.
Who looks pretty goddamn good for a cadaver of a year old.
I guess because she's already been embalmed.
Yeah, but you're what?
Well, you do. She doesn't.
That's true. I am a walking, talking, undead cadaver.
The plague of darkness visited upon Fibes himself in the end. Poetic justice. And as always, they're too late. Funny thing is, you didn't even really need to have these police characters in the movie, because if they weren't here, the entire plot would have still played out the exact same way that it did.
Pretty much.
They're just there to sort of kill time and provide some type of a counterbalance.
Yeah, we don't want to check out the box that's on the floor.
No.
Ta-da. Well.
Mission accomplished. Of course, the closing song, Somewhere Over the Rainbow.
Yeah, well, Dr. Fibes, he comes back strong in the second one. He talks a little too much. There's a bunch of harry-carry craziness going on.
He does. I almost wish that they hadn't made the second one, although it's a lot of fun, and there were supposed to be a lot of other ones after that that didn't come to pass for whatever reason. But the first is still the best in my book. And I want to thank Captain Cruella for joining me.
Oh, you are more than welcome, Kitten.
In this lovely commentary on one of my all-time favorite, not just horror movies, but movies.
I'm thinking that since we haven't really gotten through Jaws the whole way, maybe, just maybe.
Jaws next?
You and I can do a Jaws commentary. I think that one will be crazy, because, you know, as everyone knows, that I am incredibly afraid of sharks.
I would certainly be up to covering Jaws next. That's definitely a movie.
Or Sharktopus.
Sharktopus, if we can get our hands on it, sure. But, I mean, Jaws I could probably talk about. I could easily blab about that for 2.5 hours, so that should be fine. Well,
I could scream about it.
I hope that we've accurately translated or conveyed our true love for this film. And this is B. Sal and Captain Cruella signing off. We hope you enjoyed the movie.
Ciao, kittens.